Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to Reporting is Eligible. I'm Paul Noonan of Acme Packet Company and the Shepherd Express. And I guess this is most accurately described as the Joe Barry should probably be fired right now podcast, but will be not right now, it'll be later. We just got destroyed by Tampa. Baker Mayfield just put up the first opposing perfect passer rating in the history of Lambeau Field, which is, as all of you may know, a very old field where many people have quarterbacked. Although, you know, the Bears have brought in like a quarter of those, so that explains, you know, part of that stat at least. But Joe Barry has now two consecutive weeks made the NFL or the NFC Offensive Player of the Week happen. Tommy DeVito won it last week, and Baker Mayfield won it this week. And I feel like this game was really the tipping point for a lot of people because even watching tape the first time, second time too, but the first time, it was very clear that like scheme was the problem, that they just weren't being smart about defense. And so we all expected the hammer to drop, and it didn't, kind of. But we'll get to that. We'll get to all that crap. So to help us bury dang it, there's no way to end that sentence. To help us bury Joe Barry, first in Irma Otoza.
Hey, it's J.R. Radcliffe, trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And when you've lost The Onion, the great satirical publication that skewered the Packers' decision to put their secondary, you know, in Escanaba, as Andy Herman put it. when you've lost The Onion, you've lost America. Yep. And this was a galvanizing moment, unlike something I've really seen before. Obviously, there's been discontent around Joe Barry for the last, you know, certainly on this podcast, but in general, I would say there's been some discontent the last couple of years. But this is really like, this is a chorus, a central issue has arisen. Packers Nation has united. It's in a way beautiful, except it's, you know, with pitchforks in hand. Yeah. So it's a tough scene. I'm surprised that they didn't move on instantaneously.
Same
I know
here.
That's, you know, that's probably reacting to the reaction a little bit, but like they're, you know, the Eagles moved on. The Eagles, a team that is falling from the race here, not from the race, they're still going to the playoffs, but like they made a move at defensive coordinator. Maybe it didn't do them a lot of good, and I'm not sure the Packers would either, but I'm surprised that a team that still really has a chance with a strong finish to get into the playoffs didn't decide, you know what, it's now or never, let's do it. The Ned Yost move that the Milwaukee Brewers made in 2008. It probably won't matter, but it might.
It might.
I'm surprised they didn't do that.
Yeah, I am disappointed they didn't do it. Like the Eagles, but if nobody's watched the Eagles this year, they are the Vikings from last year. They are frauds. I know they were in the Super Bowl like a year ago, but they are absolute frauds. They have like the worst defense in football. They have the worst EPA per play in football. And while I would never advocate replacing anybody with Matt Patricia, which is what they did, I still think it was warranted because you got to do something. You can't just let that go. It's really bad. And you know, I feel like you at this point run a risk of losing the locker room if you don't make a move, because surely all of the defensive players on the Packers now see the reaction out there. They have to sit through tape with this guy. And just Devondre Campbell seemed basically fed up with like taking strays that are intended for Joe Barry. He just did, you know, getting strung out to dry, covering Chris Godwin for like the whole game has to just tick you off. So I feel like this is definitely like a, you may have some knock-on problems by keeping Barry around kind of problem thing here. Like, this is bad. You got to do something. You got to hold people accountable. And I hate it when people say, like, oh, the media has to hold people accountable. Like, that's usually for fans who are just mad. But, like, you actually, in an organization, when a leader is failing, you actually do have to hold him accountable because the people he's leading will not follow him if you don't do that. And that's the big, big risk here. And they're still alive for the playoffs. Like, the season's not over. So annoying. Anyway, we'll do this for another 45 minutes or
Speaking
so.
Speaking of annoying, my name is Matt, but you can call me.
Hell yeah. Good work.
Company meme weaver.
Well done.
Rabble rouser. So I take issue with Andy Herman saying that they lined up in Escanaba.
Why is that?
Because it was the wrong direction.
Because it was a day game.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Fair enough.
Okay. For those who don't get the reference, Escanaba into Moonlight is a masterpiece of stage and film, and might as well be a documentary about my family.
It is Carrington, yes. Carrington Valentine on the Onion picture, right? That is.
It is, yes. Carrington Valentine, the first Packers cornerback in space.
I wish, if I were him, I would have that framed and put it in my office forever. It's so good.
Yeah, I know we'll talk a lot about weighing the pros and cons of why not make a move now, and you kind of just laid some of that out. You know, I would say because it is a young team, because Carrington Valentine and many other guys on this team are first and second year players. I don't know if that's a good, like, maybe that's a good thing to keep the continuity there. Like, you know, you don't want to just kind of, I don't know, throw something completely new with 3 weeks to go. Like, that could also be a problem. That could also be a wrench in the locker room. But on the other hand, younger guys might be a little more receptive to the outside noise too. Like, veterans have been through this before. If you've played NFL football, you've probably been around a coordinator who's come under fire before. Like, that's not unusual in the NFL. So I could see that could also be an issue. I mean, some of it might just be taking a temperature of the locker room, which is why I do defer to Matt LaFleur's ability to read his room in this case. And, you know, for Matt LaFleur, I'm thinking this is the last new hire, right? You got to get this one right, because the several special teams coordinators haven't worked. You'll be on your third defensive coordinator. I think we all assume that the end for Joe Barry is near, not imminent. So after that, it's LaFleur. So, like, you can understand why there is a hesitation here to make sure that you absolutely get this one right, because it will reverberate for your own career.
Yeah, shields are down after this. This is this is
Captain,
the one you've
we
got.
We need more shields.
Yep. All right. Since we're very Barry heavy, shall we start with a couple of Barry specific Patreon questions?
Yes, lots of berries up in here. Like, it's a. The Berry Berry Waffle, by the way, is a local offering at the North Avenue Grill by my house. My son loves the Berry Berry Waffle. Yeah, good place. Nice little diner. Mm-hmm. Great stuff. Berry Berry Waffle. That is what we have on this podcast, is a Berry Berry Waffle. Donald Anderson, I don't have a Joe Berry pun, but I do have a 90s album song suggestion for the intro. It is Rid of Me by PJ Harvey. He has some lyrics here. Tie yourself to me, no one else. No, you're not rid of me. You're not rid of me. I could sing that, but the tune is only vaguely in my head. I was not a big PJ Harvey fan, even though PJ Harvey is awesome. Anyway, he said, this is the same guy, right? Update. The Packers have gone one whole complete game since receiving a personal foul. That's probably because you need to be within 5 yards of the other team's players at some point to foul them, which really wasn't their specialty in this game. Here is his question. The Packers have to be the worst defense in the NFL on third down this season. Are they? And if so, how historically bad are they?
They're not. They're bad. They're like the fourth worst. But the Eagles are actually the worst team on fourth down this year. By a country mile.
No kidding.
The RB's DM chart actually has to be artificially expanded to fit the Eagles onto the chart for their bad third down defense. It is much larger than all other years are. Do you have a stat that Matt Schneidman dug up and was expanded on by Bill Barnwell, which is that over the last three seasons, the Packers defense is 25th in third down conversion rate with 4 yards or fewer to go. when ESPN's data has them playing zone, which they always do on third and four or less, that drops to 30th. Teams are converting 68% of the time against the Packers in those situations. So they're
bad.
How
much of the 32% do you think is like errant passes or checking into runs that didn't work.
It's all just Justin Fields airmailing crap, and like that's it. Like, look at the schedule we play this year. There's no good quarterback. It's Mahomes, who we actually beat, and then it's Goff and Herbert, and everybody else is trash. Like,
so, I was thinking about a '90s album to counter Donald Anderson's, and I want to say Hook by Blues Traveler.
I don't think that's the name of the album, but you can get away with the song, of course.
The song. It's a single. It's the name of the
Brings
single.
You back.
Which is
sure. I like it. I like it.
Because on third down, the hook brings you back.
Mm.
I ain't telling you no lie.
Yeah.
It's a route.
Hook. Indeed. I got it.
We got it. We got it. Yes.
The hook route.
We understand.
Whatever. That was good. I gave you gold and I get nothing.
Cool. Yeah, the number of screenshots, heck, just film of, you know, guys just completely wide open all game long. There's no secret here. I mean, there'd be two defenders there, and they would neither be in the area of the receiver. They were, you know, Baker Mayfield just didn't have to make any difficult throws. He's a perfect quarterback rating. Did not have to throw down the field. All he had to do was hit a guy wide open over the middle all game long. It is a damning performance.
Pro Football Focus said that he threw zero contested catches.
That's
like
a two, wasn't it? I thought it was two.
Oh, something like that. But yeah, incredible. It was. He was out there playing college in an air raid. Like that's. It was like he was back in. Was he Oklahoma? There he went. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He was. That's what it was.
Just gruesome.
Packers 25th on third downs this year, by the way. Just so bad.
Yeah.
Pretty horrible.
Yeah, my album is Repeater by Fugazi, 1990 album. Again, not a band that I followed very closely, but kind of iconic. DC band, Fugazi, Repeater. Same thing over and over and over. And at some point, guys, I know many people have pointed this out, but like it's the whole definition of insanity thing. Like at some point, there has to be a change. And you know, like I keep searching for an explanation. Like is it a process of simplifying for a young defense? Is it a process of simplifying for a secondary that's been playing without Jaire Alexander? You know, in this game, I felt like they were reasonably healthy. Obviously, Alexander wasn't there, but Quay Walker was back. Quay Walker was not a factor. Like, I just can't explain it at all. And I'm sure there's something, but I can't understand how they allowed this to happen over and over and over. The Giants game happens and then they make it worse the next week. I don't understand that.
Don't get it at all. It's one thing to have it to come out and have a team have your tape figured out pretty well, but to not adjust back at all. It's just bonkers. Like I'm with you. It's just inexplicable. And while that is Barry's fault, like at some point LaFleur's got to be like what the hell, man? Like Chris Godwin just caught his fourth pass on Devondre Campbell. You want to do something about that now? Like that's got to happen at some point. Like everybody in the stands was doing that. So, oh man, so annoying.
Tommy DeVito, who got sacked time and time again before playing the Packers, stays upright the entire game last week, gets sacked seven times then.
Yep.
This week against the Saints, gets buried by the Saints. I mean, the Packers are the outlier. They are the defensive outlier for these guys.
Everybody's got it figured out but us. We're dumb.
It's true. We can keep rolling through some of these questions. I know these are all kind of connected.
Let's do
here,
it.
So
let's do the berries. Patrick
Detmer says his episode title recommendation is M. Barry Sing or Barry the Lead.
So we did ask for these. I do want to just point out, we have used Barry the Lead before. Not once, but twice. So we're not doing it again.
Hey, doing the same thing over and over and over. Of insanity or whatever, maybe we should do it a third time.
Maybe
it seems
should.
Like that would be the game.
Maybe it'll work this time.
Yeah. After throwing his players under the bus in his Monday press conference, is Matt LaFleur now at risk of losing the locker room and becoming the Seymour Skinner meme? Am I so out of touch? No, it's the players who are wrong. No, it's the players who are wrong. Also, and this is another question. Evan, not Tex Weston. Okay. We make jokes about LaFleur's big weakness being hiring his friends instead of capable assistant coaches, but watching LaFleur's Monday press conference and seeing his full-throated defense of Barry at the expense of his players, I'm wondering if the joke's humor is running out. Regardless of his play calling or quarterback development ability, is LaFleur's inability to put together a halfway decent staff a fireable offense? How could you trust him to hire a new defensive coordinator?
Yeah. I think.
Should I read?
Oh yeah. Go ahead. There's a third. Yeah. Let's just do that because they're all similar.
All right. Let's just power through, baby. We're gonna deal with it all.
We should
at once.
Answer
Scarf 21.
But yeah.
Of course we will. Yeah. The definition of insanity: doing the same thing over and over,
heck yeah,
but expecting different results. Matt LaFleur has stuck his neck up for Joe Barry time and time again while expecting different results, and it seems his stubborn loyalty will lose him a lot of goodwill among the Packers fandom. What do you think happens first? Matt LaFleur finally caves and decides to fire Barry, or someone higher up finally having enough and getting rid of both Barry and Matt LaFleur? This isn't the first time a promising or talented quarterback has been hindered by an underperforming defense, and I have to imagine there is at least one person in the room who knows that all too well.
So he's going to get rid of Barry. At this end of the season, Barry's done. But like, I do think you run some risks keeping him around for three games as an obvious lame duck. I always hate having lame ducks in the room. If it were me, and I do understand there's not a great like fit for a guy to take over. Like, I get that. Their staff is a little weak. We'll get to that later. But like, if this is me, I am still calling in people. I'm promoting some guy who's maybe too young for the job to try him out. I don't know who, but I would. I'm calling in coach friends who aren't in bowl games from colleges, just as consultants. And I'm telling Joe, like, hey, you can either resign and say you're going away with family, or we'll keep you around as a lame duck for a while, but you're not doing anything, and we're going to be moving on. Like, thank you for your service, etc., and do that. Like, but players are going to be around next year, and you have to maintain their respect. Like, coaches have to be able to coach, and if they think that you're just a lame walkover who throws them under the bus at the expense of his friends, that's not good. That's very bad for you. It's bad for your leadership ability. Like, that press conference defending Joe Barry, like, blame's got to go somewhere. It did seem to me like it was going towards the players, the like on-field decisions.
He's straight up said it was a communication
problem.
He
did. That's ambiguous though, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I suppose.
But like, if you're the
guy, it certainly doesn't read though as we have to do better as coaches with that. It reads
it
as
not, yeah,
everybody's culpable.
And I get why Green Dot players were ticked off about it. But yes. So this, I don't think he was thinking about player reaction when he gave that press conference. I think he was totally thinking about Joe Barry taking heat and wanting to take pressure off him. Heat's going to go somewhere. And now he's ticked off people that will be around next year. That's not good. It's a bad situation. He should not have done that.
So I want to speak directly to not Texas question there.
Okay.
Like, not being able to put together a good staff, is that a fireable offense? So I used to work for a company that was big into metrics to a fault. So like, performance reviews came on a 1 to 5 scale, and you were forced to have a bell curve.
Forced curves, annoying, but okay.
And if you were good at your job, eventually you would get promoted beyond where you should have been.
Peter Principle, yeah.
And so you would have these engineers who were awful with people, but just gifted engineers, suddenly in charge of a team, and it goes really poorly. And so maybe some people just aren't cut out to be in charge of putting other people in charge and should just only control the offense. And
I also just don't like, we've talked about Barry as a nepotism guy because he's Rod Marinelli's son-in-law, which is true. But one thing I don't like about the NFL in general and about this specifically is when you do have a friend on staff, it's difficult to evaluate them properly, and it's even more difficult to move on when you should. And loyalty is not about taking care of your friends. Loyalty is about having the trust of someone who will work hard for you while you work hard for them. And if you stop getting results or working hard for them, then it's not loyalty anymore. It's something else. It's charity. It's manipulation. Why is he going to bat for them other than they're buddies? Like, this is, seems like a drinking buddy taking one for the team. To what end? Like, what are you doing? This is three seasons of this now.
So I'll set up for him to a small degree in this regard. I know there's a lot about hiring your friends and whatnot, and they did work together for 1 year prior to him hiring Joe Barry as defensive coordinator. You know, I know we love the idea of why is this name so hard for me to say? It's Ejiro Evero.
Yeah.
Now they had worked together too. They were close. So like, that's part of what put him, Evero, into the conversation as a possibility at this in his last hiring cycle. So it would have been, I guess, a similar situation that way. I mean, and ultimately, if you work together for 3 years, I would expect that it's not cold, that there is a camaraderie that you would want to go to bat for them in some regard. Obviously, there's a point where it becomes too much and you have to be able to rise above the relationship that you built and say, this is hurting our football team. I suspect, at least in his head, there is some reason, some calculation why he believes keeping him around for these last three games that goes beyond simple loyalty. Makes sense. You know, maybe he feels like there isn't someone that they can naturally get in there who would surpass what they're capable of doing with Joe Barry already in there. And he's framing it this way so that it doesn't straight up sound like anything. Like, it doesn't sound directly like, you know, here's our calculation. He's not going to lay all of that out. And it comes across as sounding like I'm just standing up for my guy and that's it. But, you know, I do think it's a little more complicated than that, but still, I agree with you on principle that there has to be, you know, you have to acknowledge what's not working about your football team. And if you still have a shot at the playoffs with three games left, three winnable games, yeah. I know that the last two make it seem like nothing's winnable, but these three games are still winnable. You have to do what you can to get your team to the playoffs. I mean, these guys only have like 8 NFL years in them, even if they're really good, you know, like that's such a short career. You can't throw away a season looking ahead to the future. You know, like that's what you're talking about. Lame duck coordinator. You got to go for what's there now. That's the only thing you can play for here.
Yeah. If you're going to put it on your players too, you need to just eat it. You need to be like, this is my fault. I was not diligent enough in our, you know, whatever. You have to take that one for yourself if you're going to do that.
So I have, once again, experience in the corporate world very similar to this, where there was a new global director who hired a manager who was awful. And it was this global director's first ever hire. And so anything bad that you said about this manager who was terrible at their job, the global director took personally because that was their hire.
Their guy, yeah.
And this is what it's feeling like at this point, that like LaFleur is taking these things personally. It's like, you're insulting the guy that I chose. You're insulting me.
Yep. By the way.
Yeah, and you see this with draft picks too. That's why draft picks stick around longer than undrafted guys, you know?
Yep. Yeah, that's true. You know who has the best third down defense in the NFL?
Is it the Vikings?
It is the Panthers.
Oh, why?
Is it because they never get to third down? Is that why?
Nope. They have a negative 0.31 EPA on third down passes. They are far and away the best dropback EPA on third down in the league by a lot.
That's wild.
Yeah, like
I need to see the rest of the stats on that, like how often they see third down, how often they see third and short, how often it's a running play. Any context, because the Panthers are doo-doo butt cheeks.
They are doo-doo butt cheeks, but they have Ejiro Evero as their defensive coordinator, and they're good at third down. So,
yeah. I think one thing that sort of makes this an even bigger issue right now is that Brandon Staley just got fired. And if you believe in this scheme, I mean, Joe Barry was hired because he had worked with Brandon Staley with the Los Angeles Rams, and how impressed that both Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur are with that scheme, with that Fangio scheme. Joe Barry was essentially the guy that he trusted to implement that very same scheme. And Brandon Staley, the guy who was hired away to be the head coach of the Chargers, now a free agent. So, I mean, obviously, it seems like a majorly tough sell to bring in somebody from the outside at this stage of the season. But, like, it's easy to see. And with Robert Saleh on the hot seat, you know, it is so easy. Jim Leonard's still out there.
Yep.
So easy to see that there are options right now. So that's also adding to the issues for Packers fans.
Yeah, the scheme seems figured out at this point. Like, the Fangio scheme seems played out. It doesn't seem to work anymore, kind of across the board. It's always looked better with great players when you've had Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, but like I feel like it has some weaknesses that everybody's figured out how to exploit and are hard to fight back against. And Joe Barry is not going to figure that kind of thing out. He's not one of the geniuses running it. So maybe it'll come back later, but right now I feel like if I'm a Fangio tree guy, I'm learning a new scheme at this point.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Do we move on to Richard Proctor's question? You want to mention like how open Cade Otton was?
I mean,
we
can talk about the game, but I feel like there's not actually that much to talk about. Like, the Tampa just ran the same play. Like, they ran like the same three plays over and over. Like, Godwin on Campbell hit him. It got Rashad White out of the backfield, hit him. And like close to the goal line, just like whoever was open, I guess.
Well, so it was take 11 personnel, audible to 5 wide.
Yep.
Have some motion to check for man. See that it's man without a fifth man match.
Right.
And then run that fifth guy
at the linebacker. Campbell. Yeah.
That was the play that worked every single time.
And it often was the case that we had corners lined up on Rashad White, on what's that stupid tight end, like H-back guy's name who caught a touchdown? Kieft.
Oh, Kieft. Yeah, that was his first catch ever.
It was, but they kept splitting him out wide and eating coverage with him. Like, they were like, I feel like they were trolling with some Kieft routes. So he only caught the one, but like it was such an obvious plan. Like, you know, like that was the plan, and it's not that hard to fight back. Also, they did not really kill us on the ground. Like, they were fairly effective running on the ground, but if ever Joe Barry wanted to take Devondre Campbell off the field and stick another corner out there, would have been a good time for it. Does it a lot of the time. Didn't in this game.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if Campbell's tweet about how frustrated he was and like not playing through injuries anymore and needs to look out for himself first. My initial reaction to that was that he was upset with the fan reaction. You can read it a few different ways. You could read it as like upset with the coaching, upset with the combination of the things. Like, I'm sick of defending myself. Like you said, defending myself with the coaches are the problem. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, he had just a really bad game. Again, like Matt loves to say, he's got to kiss the olds. Everyone sees that. Like, it's over
but
for him.
Thing, I still to this moment think it is. He's talking about the fan reaction because people went back and found my old tweets where I said he was cooked for the last like month and a half and we're putting him out into the world. So there were people who were name searching him with cooked or old.
Yeah. Fans are definitely mad at him. I'm not that mad at him. It's not his fault. He had to guard Chris Godwin.
No,
it's not.
No. Okay. So Richard Proctor says, in the same way I rely on you all to tell me who is and who isn't a good college player, I'm going to rely on you to tell me who is a good DC replacement. Is Robert Saleh actually good? Is the Jets' defensive DVOA good this year? Does DVOA even matter anymore? Is there ROPS for defensive coordinators? Help us sound smart through your hours of labor.
There's
should
not.
We, should, yeah.
I felt the need to dig up one metric that I thought was interesting, which is the Vikings, of course, were pretty much the equivalent of the Packers on defense last year. They were 24th and 25th in DVOA. Not both. We have a young roster. The Vikings had an aging roster, really in decline. They moved on from, everybody remember who the DC was for them last year? I won't do it, Matt. It was Ed Donatell. Ed Donatell, famous for the 4th and 26th play. They got rid of Ed Donatell after 1 year as the Vikings defensive coordinator to hire Brian Flores. Brian Flores has done a great job, but more than anything, you know what he's done? He runs the most blitzes and the most dropping eights into coverage and nothing else. And the Vikings are fifth in DVOA on defense, dominating the crap out of people, sandwiched between the 49ers and the Cowboys on defensive metrics everywhere. And I think what you really need to look for is that, and that is not emblematic of just like being a wild, crazy guy. The Vikings understand that when third down comes up, you got to get yourself off the field. And they bring creative pressure, they take chances, and they basically use drop eight to confuse and to create third downs. And then on third down, they go nuts and try and kill the quarterback and take risks, and it works because that's what you want. And it's funny, it's like the same guys that are going to be available. It's like going to be Jim Leonard and Ashiro Evero if Carolina completely changes things. and
Robert Saleh.
Yeah, and Robert Saleh. So I actually, like, who knows what Leonard will do because he's kind of a weirdo. But, like, if I'm a Ryan Tree guy is probably not terrible with the way that offenses play now. I think Leonard would probably be fine. I think Evero's a really good coordinator. I saw some people today saying the only problem with getting Evero as your defensive coordinator this year is there's a good chance he'll be up for head coaching jobs pretty soon. So, by the way, Evero's scheme isn't that different. He is a kind of Fangio tree guy. I think he's just kind of smarter about it. Like, being a defensive coordinator,
he's creative.
He's
he
creative.
Run his scheme fault. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, Tom Silverstein pointed this out on the Green 19 podcast that one thing LaFleur did not do is have some sort of senior analyst or senior consultant. You know how so many teams have guys that aren't technically the main coaching staff, but could step in if something
like
goes wrong.
Like a Clements for the defense, you know?
For sure.
Like a Mike Patton. For the.
But, I mean, that's missing on this staff. And you would think that one of the correctives would be, you know, hire two guys next year. Hire a defensive coordinator and have somebody there just in case as another guy to bounce ideas off of. It's going to take money. They spent money on the special teams when the special teams needed addressing. It's going to take money and it's going to take convincing. And I don't know if it's doable even, but you got to try something like that.
So someone who I believe would be a phenomenal senior defensive assistant analyst is sitting on his couch right now with his job up in the air for next year because he doesn't know what's going to happen in Wade Phillips because the XFL and the USFL are merging. And so we don't know what teams are going to be.
How old's Wade now? Like 100?
I think he's 75.
Okay. Not too bad.
But I'm just saying. I'm not saying make him the DC. I'm just saying like.
Consultant. Like, yeah, he's the kind of guy you could have doing that, you know? Come in 10 hours a week and fix obvious crap. Yeah.
I am once again brought back to the, I'm sure I've said this before on this podcast. I always think back to the When Harry Met Sally, Carrie Fisher's character, who is constantly telling her friends, he's never going to leave her. He's never going to leave her. And her friends are like, no one thinks he's going to leave her.
Yeah.
That is the energy I'm bringing into Wade Phillips.
By the way, JR,
totally.
It's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Yeah.
I am upset that my When Harry Met Sally joke went undiscussed. That I was so proud of that.
Can you refresh my memory, Matub?
So JR mentioned this exact reference.
Yes,
into the,
I always
DMs,
do.
And I said, oh man, my exact wording, I lose. But I basically did the speech at the end, the I love it speech.
Oh yeah.
But
it was
about Joe Barry. Like, I love it that it takes an hour and a half for you to call a change to your personnel. And I love it that you're calling soft zone on third down. And I love it that you're not expecting a pass when it's 70 degrees outside. Mm-hmm.
And Green Bay Packers, when you know you want to spend the rest of the season with someone, you want to do it as soon as possible. There has to be a change at defensive coordinator.
Yep.
CJR, right. Like I was hoping for you to bring it home. That's what I wanted. Thank you.
Yeah, I did get that reference. I remember it now. I did not respond, and I apologize. A couple more questions that we'll read off here that are related to what we're just talking about here. Do you believe that LaFleur will hire a DC that runs a similar style Fangio scheme, which has shown to be antiquated in lieu of changing schemes? That's from Rob Regis. Prime Eddie Lacey says, given that we'll be searching for a new coordinator, how do you know if a defensive coordinator is any good? Offensive coordinator is mostly about plays, so an NFL team might hire you as an AI chatbot trained on Shanahan calls.
Yep.
As discussed on this pod a few months ago, DC seems a lot harder to learn. Where are the successful Belichick Saban trees? Some theories, defense is pure statistical noise, so no DC is actually any good. Or B, about Jimmy's and Joe's rather than X's and O's. Or C, about communicating complex concepts to your players effectively, like they're referencing some video of Saban explaining coverages.
Yeah.
So
I think
all that stuff makes sense.
It does, and I think this is much more of a savant thing than it is a style thing. I honestly don't think that defensive scheme matters much at all. Like we just mentioned Evereaux, and I do think Matt's right. Like he's good in that scheme because he just is creative and he attacks weakness and he changes things, you know, to attack the other team's weaknesses where Joe Barry doesn't. Joe Barry runs the same thing for every team he plays. it's frankly bizarre. But like where do you start lining up doesn't matter. Like every team's offense is different. And your ability to react to that is your biggest asset. The only way to judge that as an interview guy, like, is to actually ask the guy, like, what do you do when you see these formations? And hopefully you get a good answer and not, you know, something stupid like we're doing now.
So I think it was a couple weeks ago. Was it Barnwell who wrote the article that was like, Joe Barry made a scheme set up to stop guys like Patrick Mahomes?
Yes.
But he gets beat by Tommy DeVito.
Yeah.
Because there's just no adjustment at all.
There's not.
Are you saying there's no adjustment to Tommy DeVito or there's no adjustment in the scheme?
No adjustment in the scheme. Yes, because you don't have to prepare for the worst against Tommy DeVito. You can go after him, guys.
That's the thing that really bothers me. And it's been a common theme this year. When they play against a quarterback, except for Brett Rypien, where they actually did what they were supposed, like, apparently Joe Barry sees Brett Rypien and he knows exactly what to do. Like, go after that guy, can't throw at all. Like, Kenny Pickett's the same quarterback. Baker's kind of the same quarterback after he tore his arm up. His arm's not nearly as strong as it was. Tommy DeVito is garbage. He's a third-string quarterback who gets sacked all the time. And you play this, like, soft shell where you give up these easy throws to these weak-armed stiffs, like the only throws they can make. That's all they can do. Part of the reason they always beat the Chiefs is Patrick Mahomes gets bored doing that crap. He wants to wing it down the field where the safeties are standing. It's a little bit of an Aaron problem, actually. But you got to have a defensive coordinator who is a bit of a savant. It's hard. Like Rob Ryan, I forget which Ryan is which. Which is the smart Ryan? Which is the dumb Ryan? Who's the Wolfman Ryan?
Rex
is smart. Rob is the long-haired who looks like Michael McDonald.
You have two guys who are brothers, one who looks like the long-haired version of the other, and one of them is like one of the best defensive coordinators ever, and one of them is absolutely atrocious. And presumably they know a lot of the same things about coaching defense, but it's difficult to tell. Like, you really need the genius guy. You can't just take a scheme and be a disciple of it and go and run it without being able to actually make really clever adjustments on the fly, which is a talent, not like something you develop.
Yeah, very difficult to read, of course. We should talk about the offense a little bit before we go back to Joe Barry. It wasn't terrible. I mean, it was, again, I think Jordan Love got better as the game went on. And I mean, it seems like it's the same things. Like, he's capable of making these elite throws. He's mostly good. The footwork is bad. Yeah. The bending of the arms, like the various, you know, whatever fundamentals are bad, and somebody's going to have to clean that up. But I still think that's probably going to happen to some degree. He's always going to have that Favre in him.
Yeah, he is.
But I'm still encouraged with Jordan Love. This certainly wasn't like a step back in my mind.
He was okay in this game. He made some ugly early throws. I actually feel like he kind of kicked it up a notch when he was backed up and they were backed up in their own end zone, and he got hit and he threw a bomb to Jaden Reed that was incomplete. But it's one of the best throws I've ever seen him make. He was getting hit.
It was
and he
crazy.
Winged crazy. He winged the heck out of that thing. Like, he got everything into that one. That was a good one. It was not an easy catch to make, and I don't blame Reed for not making it all. He was double covered. But I feel like after that throw, Love was kind of there for the rest of the game. He had a couple stupid it was either late second or early third quarter plays where it was like third and nine, and he like threw Jaden Reed a 1 yard stupid flat out thing that they do all the time. LaFleur looked actually ticked at him for not actually throwing it past the sticks. So there's some weird stuff like that too. But generally speaking, I agree. Pretty good game. Not bad. Averagey at least.
The Packers really not had a 100 yard receiver at all this year.
Nope. Is not a right? One. It is right.
That's insane.
Dontavian Wicks 97 this week is the most they've had in a game. It is absolutely bonkers. Like, you feel like you're, how does Christian Watson not just randomly have, you know, a 70-yard pickup at some point and then just tack on a few to get over? But no, has not happened. They're one of the weirdest receiving corps. They're very, very balanced. It's still very up for grabs who's going to lead the team in receiving yards this year. Everybody's very, very close. Even Wicks could still do it.
You know what it reminds me of is Matt Ryan's MVP year. He threw touchdowns to like 16 different receivers.
That's right, yes. that was a very shiny year, and they did that. But it's good. Like, they've gotten such good development. Tucker Kraft actually passed Luke Musgrave in EPA generated this week, and Dontavian actually passed everybody in the receiving core in EPA created this week.
So, I need you to explain Dontavian Wicks again to me. He is small. He is slow.
He's not small.
He's not that slow.
Yeah.
He's wide open on every play.
He is,
so
yeah.
Like, he was slow relative to other receivers. And
so was Devontae.
Look, I am not holding this against him. I'm saying that these are traits right. That he clearly do not hold him back. Like, how is he's their best receiver, right? Like,
yes,
I mean, Christian Watson's the more talented guy, but he's their best receiver.
He's their best receiver, absolutely. So Dontavian Wicks was like the second or third best receiver in college his second last year. I don't remember if it was junior, redshirt, senior, whatever, but and then his college, is it Virginia he went to, I think? They changed head coaches from Bronco Mendenhall, who's awesome, to some trash guy who's bad, and they completely fell. Whole team fell apart, not just Dontavian Wicks. But Wicks is like a fun prospect, and he always was, because he was a very good route runner in college, the kind you don't really see. Like just toasting guys with very Devontae-esque moves. But he's not small. He's like normal sized for receivers, like 6'1", 200-ish. But his,
so he is taller than Devontae Adams.
He's 6'1" and a half?
So he's 6'1" and 3/8".
Okay.
Devontae is 6 foot and 7/8".
Yeah.
Dontavion weighs 6 pounds less. So I have the RAS compared cards up.
But if you look, don't tell me answers yet. But if you look at Dontavion Wicks, he has the longest arms. His arms are gigantically long. I don't care what his RAS card said. Go look at him. They look down to his knees. His catch radius is crazy.
It's because he has a short torso and long femurs.
Whatever. It still looks that way. Second, though, he is not a blazer at 40-yard dash speed, but his 10-yard split is very fast. If you're scouting guys on their ability to make quick cuts and to generate, open spaces, that's a good one. He accelerates off the line very quickly. He'll get caught up to eventually, but he's actually very, very quick off the line.
Yeah. So it's funny. So Devontae's RAS is actually 7.2 and Wicks is 9.1.
Wicks has got up to 9.1. I thought it was in the 8s. Huh.
I'm looking at it right now, and because his 10-yard split, his vertical, and his broad are crazy.
Explosion. Explosion and quickness off the line. That is his calling
card. He has a half-decent shuttle. It's 4.2 flat. His 3-cone is 6.91. So not
under
great,
7's good for the Packers. That meets the threshold.
And that's kind of crazy. That's like the only thing that Devontae actually beats him in is the 3-cone.
Yeah.
But other than that, Wicks. Oh, and Devontae's 40-yard dash, like his flying 40, whereas Devontae's 10-yard split's awful.
Yeah. Wicks fell down on draft boards for two main reasons, one of which is his team completely fell apart on him, and he did have a case of the drops in college, and that's one thing I stopped caring about. Like, you can fix drops. That's one of the most fixable things. So he is their best receiver, and he's a joy to watch. He's very, very fun.
At this point, people know this, but this 2023 draft class, it could go down as an all-timer.
It might.
You know?
It really might. It's very good.
Anthony Johnson is good, and this is at the bottom here. Anthony Johnson and Carrington Valentine are good. Andrews Carlson is whatever, but like not terrible, yeah. I guess. I don't know. Carl Brooks has flashed. Yep. Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave are both like studs. Jaden Reed, Lucas Van Ness, Wicks,
Colby Wooden.
Colby Wooden. Yeah. I mean,
you said Carl Brooks twice.
I did. Carl Brooks, Colby Wooden, defensive lineman.
Mina Kimes was talking about how good the skill position draft was. And one of the top responses to that was Wisconsin sports legend Nate Tice saying, actually, Carl Brooks has also been amazing. So
nice. I will, of course, always like Wicks because he is one of my guys. And while I did rip on Jaden Reed, and Reed is good. I like Jaden Reed. I do think Wicks is going to be the better prospect, which is mainly what I wrote. And I think that's true. I think he's going to be the better receiver and already is the better receiver.
Right, but you also did write about how Reed was misused in the situation with MSU, as well as like having his grade school buddy as
absolutely
the quarterback.
100%. There were a lot of actual good mitigating factors for Reed. 100%.
Yeah.
I realize this is a team that came into the year needing a lot of rookies to get on the field based on their salary cap situation. So some of this might be skewed because they're getting reps. Like I don't know if Carrington Valentine long term is a guy, but I sure think he is.
Yeah, I think he's
so
a guy.
I do take that a little bit of grain of salt.
What happens if this is the 2011 Seahawks draft?
And we
drafted 6 Pro Bowlers and they all have to get paid at the same time.
I mean, good.
Jesus.
I would love that to be a problem. That'd be super.
Road right now, like there's so many problems to get through first.
Yep.
But no, but that's the thing. Like a team that might miss the playoffs 4 years from now, they have 6 Pro Bowlers that need to get paid with all these other holes.
New defensive coordinator. Get it done.
The Aaron Jones usage was a little interesting.
We should talk about that because it was weird and dumb. Like, I think
he had 8 carries in the opening drive.
And when that happened, we were all like, pitch count was a lie, right? That's what I thought. I was like, okay, pitch count's a lie. He's just going to get like 20 carries in this game. And then it wasn't a lie. He just stopped playing.
He got his ninth carry in the third quarter.
Yeah. They just, like, just blew it early. Like, just used up all their Jones. Like, it's like a video game that has, like, a, you know, a bonus, a nitro button, whatever. And you use it all to start the race. And then you're out for the rest of the race. And everybody passes you. That's what you did. Don't do that. What are you doing? Matt had kind of a weird game on offense, too. That was also a little bit of a bizarre thing. Unless Jones got hurt, which is, I don't think he did, but that's all I can really think of. He also seems terrified of Patrick Taylor, which, if that's the case, I don't have any use for Patrick Taylor. They stopped running the ball after Jones. Like, they barely ran the ball at all.
Yeah. I never thought there'd be a game where you really did kind of miss A.J. Dillon, but, like, he's been so valuable.
Yep.
And not having him seemed to be a big issue.
It's because it's Dillon Sember, baby.
Dillon Sember. I'm going to read a few more.
Dillon's a monster in December, if people forgot.
I think we got that. Yeah. We got that, Matub. Thank you. Thank you. Very good. Very good. You don't have to explain it when the joke is in the pun. You don't have to. Okay, I'm going to read a few more questions because there's a lot more Joe Barry stuff.
Boy, there is.
So we'll go through it. Obviously, patrons get their questions read, so we will be allegiant to that. But if we don't spend a ton of time, only because we've kind of covered the terrain. Tim Braun says, why has LaFleur hung on to Joe Barry this long? Has it gotten to the point where Matt LaFleur should be fired over not firing Joe Barry last year? I think most of us didn't want him hired in the first place, but hanging on feels like it will be the downfall of Matt LaFleur. I'll say this too, like, part of what is making this so intense right now is that there was a lack of popularity around the Joe Barry hire in the first place.
Yeah.
So this is like the Justin Harrell principle, I'll call it, when fans seem to know right away that it's a bad idea. And it may not be, like, it's just, you forget the chorus of, you know, the Rashawn Gary is the other side of it, where a lot of people didn't like that. It worked out. So now we're, oh, okay, we were wrong, whatever, it's fine. But when you are right about it, then it just intensifies. So that's kind of where we're at with that.
Yeah. And self-scouting is a problem that LaFleur has. It's something to keep an eye on. I don't think he should be fired over it just yet. But, I mean, let's see what happens. If they end up hiring, like, Matt Patricia over the offseason, then I will change my tune on that. And
why would you put that out into the universe? Oh, my God.
Because it's going to be an option. And, I mean, if they're listening to me and make the decision opposite of what I'm saying, I mean, screw off.
All right, Dr. Hillbilly said, we all know Barry has to go.
Yeah.
I'd be happy if it happened today, but the defensive coaching cupboard is bare. We have no promising assistants to replace him. That strikes me as a general weakness under LaFleur in the wake of the Hackett and Getsy departures. Are we out of rising stars? And how did the Packers let that happen? I would say that, like, some of these guys, they're not stars yet only because they haven't had an opportunity to show that they're stars. Like, so many, you know, sometimes when you see lists of, well, who could replace them, it's, you know, quality coordinator or, like, you know, like, linebackers, coaches. It's guys who just haven't had a chance yet. There are a lot of assistants on this team that most people have not heard of.
Yeah.
But that's true on every NFL team. So there could be a guy there. We don't know. You don't know who's got that genius spark.
Did you know our defensive backs coach is named Ryan Downward?
Oh,
Downard.
I've been looking.
Yeah,
Downard. Okay. Yeah, and Jerry Montgomery is the other name that I think a lot of people
probably know.
But there's a lot of guys that have been coaching forever, and I vaguely know the name because I see the coverage in our you know, on our website, but not because I know these guys.
Yep.
Mark Patscarby says, is Joe Barry himself regressing? The last few years, we ended the seasons really strong against terrible quarterbacks. This year, we are getting lit up by Tommy DeVito and Baker Mayfield. Also, what odds do you give the Packers of winning out these last three games?
He's gotten worse every year. That is 100% true. He's been a mid, like a low 20s DVOA guy, and then a mid 20s DVOA guy, and now a bottom of the barrel DVOA guy. So, yes.
I would be interested to see if he's gotten any worse or if people have just played against his scheme better.
Well, probably that, but that is getting worse. Your job is to adjust to that happening.
Yeah, if you're not growing, you're dying. I get it. What I'm saying is I just wonder if he's not, like, actively regressing so much as just this is what he's always been.
I think just last week said, maybe it was when they were good against the Chiefs. Like, no, he's not good. He does the same. He has the same problem every time. It doesn't stop the run, gets eaten to death on third down. Like, So I feel like a lot of the problems are the same problems that have been happening forever. So That's probably true. They probably start happening more as teams pick up on the fact that they can do that. what do you guys think winning the last three games?
Ugh.
Yeah. I think they'll get by Carolina kind of no matter what. Although I could even,
I don't know.
I know. I could see a letdown here because I think the locker room is toxic too. But I think that the Vikings or the Bears jump up and get them. So, or both.
I can tell you this. Before the Panthers game, not including the Panthers game, the Packers have been favored by odds makers four times so far this year. They have won one of those games.
Woo.
All their other victories came when they were underdogs.
Yeah, and that's sort of a non-statistical way of looking at it when they got to the point of the season where they were so good that now, for the first time in the Jordan Love era, they were expected to win football games. How did they respond to that? Obviously, you could say very, very badly. You know, there's a much deeper look than that, but
yeah.
I mean, the fact of the matter is the team hasn't handled success. They haven't. Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't hire Evero because we are already Chargersing pretty hard.
Jeez.
Well, so they have the 11th pick in the draft right now. The Packers do. You know, so are we back to that conversation where do you want to beat Carolina? Because if you don't believe that they're going to beat Minnesota and Chicago, then what are they playing for? I mean, obviously,
if they
lose to Carolina, it hurts the Bears.
it's a fair point. Like, if you're going to lose one, then you should definitely lose this
one.
Go
all in, baby.
Yeah. This one helps you the most. So, yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, they're not going to do that. I do think, well, let me say it this way. I'm actually going to get to do a little more coverage with the Packers. I'm going to possibly be able to go to the last game of the season against the Bears. I probably would get to go to a playoff game if they qualify. So I'm as somebody who personally would like to do that, I am all in favor of them winning out.
Heck yeah.
I do think it's on the table for them only because I know that they're capable of it. Cause I saw them do that sort of thing. These teams don't scare me that much, but it's just that the Packers the last 2 weeks don't look like a team that can beat anybody. So I don't think anybody can realistically say for sure. Oh, they can easily win those three games. I don't think easily they can, but they can do it.
I just remembered something. Packers Panthers 2017. You guys remember that game?
Not at all. Not even
was that,
a little.
Was that the more points 99 game?
So 2017 was the other time Rodgers broke his collarbone.
Oh
yes, that was his first game back. They were still alive mathematically. Rodgers rushed back. They played poorly, and then he went back into hibernation because they had been eliminated with their loss.
And it's the game where he missed a wide open Randall Cobb and threw his surface, and everybody remembered that. But my very favorite part is Rodgers came back. He's like, "Hey, I'm coming back this week, but I'm not coming back to save this team. I'm coming back to play football the way I know how to play football."
Then he played one game, they got eliminated, and he shut down for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it was a must-win game, and they lost, so it felt like he played football the way he knows how to play football.
He wasn't wrong.
There was a shot of Jordan Love holding a surface on the sideline, which I'm sure there is probably every game. I just happened to notice this one. It was after a bad turn in the game, and I really wanted him to throw it down, but I'm like, Jordan Love ain't going to do that. He's way too nice. He's just going to he would gently set it on the ground and be upset, but he's not there in that stage of his career.
I love how, like, barely into his second contract, Jordan Love is like so much more Wisconsin than Rodgers ever was.
Yeah. All right, JD said, of all the realistic options, who would you like to see the Packers bring in as the next DC? Sub question, how awesome is it going to be watching Musgrave and Kraft be the next dominating tight end duo in the league? Seriously excited for the future of these two together.
So exciting, and that they do different things. My big fear on Musgrave and Kraft is that Kraft has gotten his opportunities now because Musgrave isn't on the field. And while it is very obvious that they do different things and should and could play together easily, I worry that when Musgrave comes back, that Kraft just isn't out there with him. So that. And I would actually like Leonard still if he's up for it. I like Jim Leonard. I think he is a savant, and I think he would do well.
I'm for that. Brandon Staley, like, I know that nobody's high on him right now, but he was awesome as a Rams defensive coordinator.
He was.
You could do so much worse.
I like him better than Barry. He'd be an upgrade at that.
But
of course, sorry, Mattel.
We saw Kraft and Sims on the field at the same time.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
When is the last time the league truly saw a complementary tight end duo.
Is it Patriots?
I want to say, yeah.
Is it Murder Was the
Gronk
Case?
And Hernandez. Yeah. Yeah.
So uncomfortable. Yeah, it's like, Hernandez Gronkowski.
So it's been over a decade since the league has seen a truly complementary receiving threat tight end.
I'm sure there are other examples. It's just that's the last one where both of them essentially became stars at it.
Usually there's not enough targets to go around for that.
They were good at different things. Like,
yeah. Well, it also took an offense that doesn't need to throw the ball deep and throws it over the middle like they did. So that obviously helped their receiving numbers. All right, Jason Albert, what was it about the good games, those three fun ones anyway, that masked Barry's flaws? Was it just luck or did he do something different? I know you guys have been saying that he sucks since he was hired, but I was wondering why the D can look okay against good teams sometimes and often look absolute ass against the worst teams. Is it just random variance? I think this is a really good question.
I do too. So I think the one that stymies me is actually the Lions. I'm actually, in retrospect, very surprised that Ben Johnson was not able to just eat our lunch with the offensive line that they have, with hitting Amon-Ra like over the middle a bunch of times. And I don't actually have a great answer for that one. Andy Reid, I do, though. The Chiefs are, they just don't have the horses to abuse the Packers like pretty much everyone else does. That includes the Giants. Like, Jalen Hyatt and Wandale Robinson, if they were on the Chiefs, would both be a million times better than pretty much any Chiefs receiver that is on the team. They are just Kelce and Rashi Rice. Rice is a good but not great player so far. He's very promising. I think he'll be maybe a star later on. But they have so many plays to those garbage slot receivers playing out wide that they actually can't make the same mismatches happen. Like, Travis Kelce, for all of his greatness, is still a tight end, and safeties are still something you can do to Travis Kelce. And so that mismatch is harder to generate. And Rashi Rice is an outside receiver. He's not a slot receiver. They have 8 million slot receivers. But he does kind of have to play outside. MVS does too, but MVS sucks. And so, like, you're trying to create the same kind of mismatches with, like, Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney on our linebackers, and or Keyshawn Nixon, and it's just not as big a mismatch. Those guys are garbage. They have trouble catching the ball. They're not fast. They're not swift to foot. Kadarius Toney is very stupid. It's really a problem. And Patrick Mahomes doesn't like to play that game. He likes to
tell me how you really feel.
I love the measured analysis. Like, that guy sucks. That guy sucks. That guy's fine. Maybe later though. That guy sucks. That guy sucks.
You're cool.
That trade
I'm
for
out.
Yeah, that trade for Kadarius Toney is gonna haunt them for a bit. He's not a good player.
I just love that they traded like nothing for him.
They didn't. Yeah,
and everyone's but they like, play "Wow, they got him for nothing."
Yeah, because he's terrible. He's very bad. But like the Lions game, I got to go watch that one again. I don't know how Joe Barry coached a good game against the Lions.
They've
been trashed
lately. Again.
Yeah.
It turns out Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary had the games of their lives.
Oh, they ate in that game, and a Goff can't throw, and he's under pressure.
And then also Goff crapped in his pantaloons.
Yeah.
And, like, fumbled the game away quite literally.
All
That's
right.
what happened.
I get that one. One thing the Packers can actually do well is pass rush. Like, that's the one thing they can do well. And actually, a lot of the Barry philosophy is we will play the bend but don't break. We won't give up touchdowns. We'll make people go down the field. And at some point during going down the field, Rashawn Gary will get a 10-yard sack. And that will cause a punt. Like, that's a lot of what they do against the Lions. If you can actually get to Goff, that's a really good strategy. So I don't know why they didn't do it against the Giants. But, yeah, here we are.
Matthew Keating says, what is a bigger issue with the defense, the coach, or the scheme itself? Also, how much blame does Goody deserve for the defensive substitute? He spent a lot of assets, sure, but it doesn't seem like the pieces fit together all that well. And there are some really big holes, safety, run stuffing, big guys, etc. Real quickly, somebody made a reference before about somebody above LaFleur, and I think most people know this, but Brian Gutekunst cannot fire, the way that the Packers are currently structured, cannot fire Joe Barry. He has no say over on-field personnel. This was established in 2019 with Mark Murphy, where there are three separate silos. There's Matt LaFleur, there's Brian Gutekunst, there's Russ Ball. They answer separately to Mark Murphy. They do not. They work together, of course, but they do not have say over the people below them. Yeah. So for those thinking someone who's going to step in, the only one who's going to do that is Mark Murphy. Mark Murphy has shown that he would rather not be involved. He has denied meddling before. He does not want to do that. So that's where we are. It's Matt LaFleur is the one who's got to make the call.
What you're saying is they are the executive, legislative, and judicial, and Mark Murphy is the judicial branch of the 90s as opposed to the today.
I think that's exactly what I'm saying.
So I think coach is the answer. The scheme, like I said, I really don't think scheme matters that much. It's just you have to understand what's going on opposite and adjust your scheme to fit it.
I'm sorry. I know that Justice is listening to this and like pulling his hair out right now.
I don't care because
going like, if they just ran man match quarters, it would all be better.
But that's coaching. That's not scheme. Like that is seeing what's going on the other side and seeing your personnel and doing that. Like where you put your hand in the ground doesn't matter. Like it just doesn't. Like
It sounds like you're stuck on 4-3 versus 3-4.
No, not 4-3 versus 3-4. Like, this is, you could play the base that Barry does with the stupid two safety, deep look and the quick rotation, whatever the Fangio defense does. But you don't have to play zone all the time out of that scheme.
Sure.
Like, that's the thing. Like, you don't have to do that. they play man. They don't do it often, but they do it. It's in the playbook. So, like, you can do that. And I agree, like Justice is playing center, but like you can do match quarters. That's fine. But like, that's not it's like an entirely new scheme for them. Just like call the good plays, I guess is what we often say.
The thing that I hate most about his two safety deep look that rotates to cover three literally every single time.
Every time. So, like, don't do that.
Why even feign that you're running cover two?
This time we'll get him. No, you won't. You do the same stupid rotation every goddamn time.
All right, we got a couple Jair Alexander questions that I'm going to lump together here because we got a lot of questions left that I want to get through. Jonathan Deal says, is Jair the Darius Slay to Barry's Matt Patricia? Also, at what point do Murphy or Goody say to Matt, either you fire Barry or I fire both of you?
All right, in the offseason.
K-Time7 says, adios of Joseph, is that even a pun? Can you describe the spectrum of outcomes regarding the Jair situation?
Nobody knows because Jair is a weird dude. If he was on some kind of soft strike.
Did you catch that? I caught that.
I didn't see it. What?
Every time you say Jair, it sounds like you're saying JR. JR.
Yes.
It sounds like JR.
It does.
JR is a weird dude.
JR is a weird dude.
Carry on. Tell me more.
Guessing what's going on inside of JR Alexander's head is, now I'm doing it on purpose. It is impossible. And I would say I wouldn't discount him being on sort of a soft strike or just a I'm not feeling 100%, so I'm not going out there for this idiot who's coordinating our defense kind of strike. It's possible. I don't like given Devondre Campbell sort of echoing those sentiments today, probably even more possible. But I would take players at their word generally that they are hurt and that they it seems the weird thing about it is. If you're out this long, you should go on IR so that you can be replaced, and he didn't. But sometimes you just have an injury that lingers. And so the range of outcomes is like he walks off the team versus he's back next week and plays super awesome. So
Do you have to? Do you have to?
Do you have to let it linger? Yeah. I saw where you were going with that. It wasn't in an Irish enough accent, but it was fine.
I know.
I
want to jump back to the Darius Slay to Matt Patricia joke that Deal made. That's quite good.
It is.
Something that people don't realize. Patricia is now once again the DC over Darius Slay.
He is. That did happen.
This is a Hallmark movie in the making. because it's Christmas time and they have a chance to reconcile in the city of brotherly love.
Maybe they shouldn't let game winning touchdowns at the end of regulation.
They're gonna make the playoffs. Yeah. Good on you, Seattle. Good game last night.
So here's the thing. I don't think I believe Jair Alexander is legitimately hurt. I don't think there's any shenanigans there. I could definitely be proven wrong, but I don't think so. When you go on IR, I think people remember this, but like you're not allowed to practice. That's a 4-week basically ban from practice too. And Jair Alexander has been practicing. So even though this injury is in my mind, not healing the way they wanted to, you know, he's always ready to go. whenever he's called, whenever he feels good, because he's been practicing, he's been locked in. You know, if you're going to go on IR, it really is a full-fledged commitment to just not doing football for 4 weeks, and that might not match up. And in his specific case, because they, I think, are covered at that position, they really don't need, like, they don't need to replace a roster spot. They don't need Jair's roster spot. So it's not as big of a risk to have him stick around thinking, well, maybe it's only a 2 week thing or a 3 week thing. And obviously it's been much, much worse than that. But I don't think there's anything too nefarious afoot there. He's obviously a very strange personality and that could go wrong at any moment, but I think it's okay. I think it's going to be okay.
I hope so.
All right. Case of the Sunday Berries. We've got other questions now that aren't related to Jair or to Joe Barry.
Some of them are still case related.
Case of the Sunday Barry says, a Joe Barry pun. I'm drawing a blank. Use my handle as the episode title, you cowards. We'll see. That's on Paul. We'll find out. I'll go up a Patreon tier if you all tell us about the Pack-A-Day Cheesehead TV and Acme Packing Company schism. This is news to me, by the way.
Me too.
We need to know the inner workings of podcast drama in these trying times. Paul, were you stunned like a podcasting pariah the first time you used data that suggested the Packers might not be good at something? Matt, was it reckless speculation about player PED use? Kidding aside, I really don't get the jokes. I'm really sorry, guys. Joe Barry is going to be talked to death here, so let's ask a question further afield. Love has had quite some time to develop in a safe environment. He's shown both flashes and inconsistency. Is there a metric-based definition for a high-variance quarterback? Is Love one?
Yeah, he is, and there is. Yeah. It's the slugger. It's actually a good QBOPS one. It's a guy with a high completion percent or a high yards per completion and a low completion percentage. Where if you hit on your we say deep shots too much, but Love hits a lot of balls down the field. If you hit on a lot of those, you're going to win games. If you have a bad week where those just don't connect, you're not. There have been a lot of successful high variance quarterbacks in the past. The best is probably Donovan McNabb. And I think Love is a lot like Donovan McNabb. So I think that is a good comp there. And that is kind of that guy.
I was doing the Dante Culpepper and I realized I had the wrong quarterback.
Dante quarterback, Culpepper and Donovan McNabb are two different
people. I got those. Those guys were nothing alike, but I got them mixed up all the time just because their names were similar. Dante Culpepper, Donovan McNabb. I don't know what it is.
Okay. So also the podcast schism, that was like, what, 2 years ago when we had the rivalry?
I guess the fake rivalry. I do think.
Yeah.
So first of all, this is going to be instantly disproven because Andy and Justice do podcasts together all the time.
Yeah.
And so that one gone. I feel like Cheesehead TV has gotten a little more insular over time. In having random people like me on, and this is not a complaint. This is those guys can do what they want. I feel like they've leaned into, much more obviously positive coverage all the time. Carry the G has really become a mantra for them. They do it. It seems to serve them well. And it's not like they like never talk to us or anything like that. Not at all. Aaron Nagler just retweeted me the other day. Like, yay for that. Always happy to have that. But like, I do think as competition has grown amongst the podcast, there's a little bit less lovey-dovey sharing that goes on as well. I do think that's a thing that's happened. That's natural and it's fine. And, you know, I won't say a bad thing about any of those guys. I think Cheesehead TV has done very well by themselves. I think Pack-A-Day is great. And, you know, we do our thing here too. So,
also, like, do people forget that I was one of the founding members of Pack-A-Day?
People do forget that.
People forget, Matub. Yeah, I need a flowchart.
Zach Jacobson and I were the first people to interview anyone of substance for Pack-A-Day. We got former players on our episodes.
Yeah, but there's not a schism. Like, honestly, we all get along pretty well we talk randomly. And
Tyler, who runs the Cheesehead TV socials, I had a 4.5-hour layover in O'Hare, and Tyler and I met up and like had coffee and had a great time talking.
I think I saw him there the other day, and he was headed out, so I didn't stop him, but...
I need a flowchart because I am not deeply entrenched in Packers Twitter. I obviously follow a few people here, a few people there. I don't even know necessarily off the top of my head who the Pack-A-Day like group is, who the Cheesehead TV group is. I have a lot of respect for like guys like Aaron Nagler that you see everywhere. I have a lot of respect for a lot of these people. Yeah. It's cool to see.
It's a good group of diverse podcasters doing different things. So
also,
yeah, like, I dig that.
I will never say like a bad word about Nagler. he is the reason that I'm probably sitting here. Like, he boosted my content so much in the beginning of me making it that, like, I have the audience that I do because of him.
Like, yeah, I know. I know Aaron's rubbed some people the wrong way. I like talking to Aaron. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we're going to keep moving. Dennis Williams, is zone inherently more difficult to execute than man? If so, if that's all we run, is there an expectation that we end up with more misses and opportunities for mediocre quarterbacks to carve us up? Sub-question, if allowed, what does the rest of the league run? Or is it where teams know how to do both and when it's the right time for each?
I think to start with part two, I'm going to leave part one to Matt, I think, who can answer it better. But I know the answer to two, which is, most of the league runs mostly zone. Zone is run like 65-70% of the time. But yes, teams that know how to do both and when are going to be the best defenses. That's 100% correct.
Okay. Also, so zone is one of those situations where if you screw up, there's supposed to be someone else to help. Whereas in a man situation, if you screw up, it's a touchdown.
It's six, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the mantra, I guess. But what you run into with zone is you really cannot give time. If you allow more than 2.5 seconds, you're going to have a soft spot, and it's going to be exploited. Extra problem when you run across an offensive coordinator who knows how to spread out your zone and read the soft spots from the snap, and you have a quarterback who's not a total mashed potato brain. Like, Baker Mayfield has his problems, but like, he's not a terrible quarterback. And you're gonna get destroyed.
Yeah, I'd say generally, man is more high risk, high reward. It also is harder to run against running quarterbacks unless you leave a spy for him, which is difficult to do because you might not be carding somebody if you do that. But there is a time for it. One of the big Barry problems is running too much of that, we just say soft zone. It means a zone that you will be able to complete a pass against if given enough time in high leverage situations. High leverage situations are good times to run man, to make the offense commit to a low percentage pass, because the result, if it is not complete, is a turnover. Like, that's, you know, you get a punt, you get the ball back, whatever. And we just don't do that. That's, I would say, the biggest Barry problem.
All right, Price Trozen says, on Tampa's last touchdown, pre-snap Rudy Ford was visibly upset and confused. He was gesturing wildly, and his teammates seemed to pay him no heed. Talking about Jonathan Owens there.
Yep.
The play subsequently blew up, leading to the dagger. In this situation, wouldn't Matt LaFleur think a timeout in this situation would be a good idea, regardless if he burned one in a McCarthy-esque challenge earlier? And I apologize for being obvious, but the 90s album name to describe this week is Dookie, Green Day, 1994.
I disagree, because Dookie is a masterpiece.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's in the name.
It's in the
name. But yes,
it's a good name, but it is a masterpiece of an album.
In terms of the play itself, by that time, I'm not sure it mattered that much. But a timeout probably would have been warranted given the gravity of the play, I guess. But you're splitting hairs, because the comeback you were going to have to put on would also have been greatly aided by a timeout. And it's just one of those situations where you screwed up and there isn't a good solution. It's either going to cost you a timeout, or it's going to cost you maybe a touchdown, maybe you get lucky. So he would have been warranted, but I get why he didn't do it too.
Also, I don't think that was McCarthy-esque challenge. The replay really looked like Jones got it. Like, it really did.
Yeah, I don't know. He does occasionally let emotion be his guide when it comes to making challenges. I think,
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I'm also gonna throw another album, "Live Through This" by Hole, because Packers are gonna live through this. And it's so, you know, we came into the season thinking it'll be considered a success if Jordan Love shows improvement, even if they win like 7 or 8 games. Well, okay, that's where we're headed. That's what's going to happen. And it's still not going to be feeling like a success, because they could taste the playoffs there. Yep. For a second. It feels so much like 2008, where his first year of Aaron Rodgers, they beat a 12-4 Colts team that year. They beat Minnesota. They were 4-3 at one point. Then they lost a game to Tennessee in overtime. All the rest of the games except for two. So, and one of them was against the 0-16 Lions. Shouts
right.
to Joe Barry
Shouts
again.
To Joe Barry.
but, you know, it, it really, like, you look at these skilled guys, it really does feel like the start of something special. And it, the frustration is they have pumped all the resources into the defense, and it is not bearing fruit, at least not to the degree that you would like it to. But there is so much to like about what's transpired, as bad as this is wrapped up. You know, it is important to kind of keep that, yeah, that big picture too. And maybe they make the playoffs still. That's still on the table.
Maybe. It's, could happen.
I can't believe we're on the cusp of a top 10 pick and a playoff spot.
Yep.
Right? That's what happens in the modern age here. You're either a smart fella or a fart smella. Title recommendation, putting a berry on top of this shit Sunday.
yes, that would be a good
title.
That works
on many levels.
Yes, that would be good for SEO and Apple censorship and all that good stuff.
Yes, for the long-term health of the Packers, is it actually a good thing if the Packers defense gives Love his Rodgers 2008 season? Weird. I was just talking about that. Which is to say, a bad record, no playoffs, leading to a new defensive coordinator while he otherwise puts up good individual stats. Or am I just huffing copium?
Porque no los dos.
Yeah.
Why not both?
There's pluses and minuses to everything, and if that is what happens, it could end up being a big plus. I do feel like they're not going anywhere with Barry, and getting rid – like, if they had made the playoffs just 3 weeks ago, we were talking about Barry's probably coming back next year. And if that happens, that's probably bad. Like, that's probably bad for the team. They probably are gelling into a good team and not making the playoffs because their defense sucks. So, yes, it's good copium. It makes sense.
And haven't we reached the point now where they went out? Like, Joe Barry's not going to be here next
year. Yeah, I think
year.
He's toast.
We kind of reached the point where
expires.
Just win, baby.
Yep.
They have to actively re-sign him.
Yeah, they will let it expire at this point. And they could, you know, so they're playing with house money now, baby. Just go win the games. It doesn't matter. You're going to.
90s album, Super Unknown, Soundgarden.
Very good album.
That's a 90s album, all right.
Flila Jola.
It's got Black Hole Sun.
It does.
Wash Away the Pain, you know.
Yes. Soundgarden, very cheery band. Definitely fits the vibe. Clearly, Joel Osment, look, going forward, does the team build to Love strengths or keep pigeonholing Shanahan's scheme with the wrong skill players?
I like the skill players. I don't get the question, Flaley Joel. Especially Kraft. Kraft is good for that system. I feel like Wicks and Reed are both good for that system. Honestly, Watson, if he stays healthy, is fine for it. He's been great so far. Musgrave's a little bit of a weird fit, but you can make that work. That's totally fine. So I... Like, yes, they could use a Kyle Juszczyk. Josiah DeGuerra isn't that or anything else. But, like, that's not the biggest deal in the world. That's okay.
I mean, is Musgrave a Juszczyk?
No, he's not. he's like a Kittle.
True.
He's more like that. You have a Kittle and a Kelsey. That's what you got. So, yay for that.
Okay. Just a couple Hall of Famers. It's perfect. Ryan Ziegler says, going all the way back through the early 70s, the Packers have rarely had a successful defensive scheme and staff. Fritz Schirmer, a few years of capers, and a whiff of Ed Donatell is what the success on defense looks like. Damn. We can make fun of Chicago all we like for being unable to develop a quarterback since Dirt was invented, but we clearly have had the same issue figuring out how to run a defense. The only logical option is to try again, but the culture that is being developed feels like it may be a bigger problem than can be resolved.
Wow, it sounds like Ryan wants us to sign Lovie Smith.
Yeah. I feel like this is all true, first of all. Yes, correct. Capers, I feel like, put a couple good ones out there after the Super Bowl run. Like, they got close before they moved on from him a couple of times. Just didn't quite get it done. And part of the problem the Packers have compared to the Bears is they're usually paying for a Hall of Fame quarterback and are usually filling in parts of the defense with other random people who aren't as good. Like, it's not a design choice so much as it is your success does have a cost in the NFL, and that is one of the costs.
All right. Dutch Boy 5, a couple of weeks ago, the intro was Fairy Tale of New York. Kudos for that, as it was appropriate and a great homage to the passing of Sean McGowan.
All right.
It is one of my favorite Christmas songs. My next favorite would be Joe Barry Got Run Over by a Reindeer. What say you? Favorite holiday song?
I do love Fairy Tale of New York, and if you didn't see Shane McGowan's funeral where Glenn Hansard sang it with a bunch of people, go check that out on YouTube. It is excellent. I like a lot of Sufjan Stevens stuff. Come Thou Font of Every Blessing is excellent by him. His O Holy Night is excellent. He's got a lot of other originals that are very good. The Low Christmas album is excellent. If you put on the Hipster Christmas channel on Pandora, it'll be like one of the first four songs that's on it. Matt Pond PA's Snow album is also very good. I recommend all those.
What about you, Matub? What's your Christmas, what's your favorite?
So I was a choir kid in high school, right? And as a senior in high school, things that you wanted were the lead in the musical and the O Holy Night solo. And so O Holy Night holds a very special place in my heart. And I mean the like classic recording of it. So that would be it for me.
My serious answer would be O Holy Night, but not the Josh Groban-esque.
Yes, hit that's every, not
you know, you don't want that.
Hit the range. The humble, the humility of like a Tracy Chapman. She has a version of it that I love, love, love. So that's my serious answer. I am not a Christmas person. I don't like it at all. It's just my least favorite time of year. And I therefore choose I Won't Be Home for Christmas by Blink-182, which is an anti-Christmas song that I quite enjoy. That's my actual answer. But I do like A Holy Night. I like the Christmas hymns. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard not to like them. They're kind of dope.
They're good.
Mark Hackett says, go ahead real quick.
The St. Lucia song is good too. There's not a definitive recording of it out there, but that's a good one if you can find one.
Mark Hackett says, Matt LaFleur is just David Brent, isn't he? Passive, weak. Even those locker room videos after wins are cringeworthy and reminiscent of the UK office dance-off scene. Is he the type of person you want to lead and or improve a young group?
He does have an interesting tenor for a football coach. I will say that. Like, I don't mind it. Guys seem to respect him. But, you know, he's not like a Gur Arg guy, which is a little unusual, but it does happen in the Shanty School with some regularity. So I think that you judge someone's leadership based on how well the people underneath him actually execute, and that seems to go pretty well. So I'm not judging a book by its cover there. He seems to do fine, and I will continue to do that. Plus the ladies looking at him.
Yes. I'm gonna go watch Hard Knocks right after this. Mike McDaniel, the Miami Dolphins. Similar sort of a nerdier vibe, certainly, than Matt LaFleur, but non-traditional. You know, he's not a guy who's going to scream and get in your face. He's going to at times, but it seems like it's more about relationships. It's more about backing it up with science, with data, with, you know, just that's where football is. You know, there's so much information, and I feel like there's just, you know, we're way past the era
also,
where
like,
football coaches.
Are you going to judge like Belichick by his cover, who's also not like a Gur Arg guy, but is just like a weird crump in a hoodie? Like, that's also non-traditional.
A sleeveless hoodie.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, Mike McDaniel is that like effortlessly cool nerd that you meet in college. Like, I think he does fit the mold of like the cool head coach.
I love watching Hard Knocks this season. I am so into it. Mike McDaniel, rock star. I am all in on the Dolphins. I really hope they do well. They got a couple Wisconsin Badgers in prominent roles. Alec Ingold among them. Walter Payton, Man of the Year nominee.
Yep.
I am all in on the Miami Dolphins. This happens every damn year with Hard Knocks. They even made me like the Lions and the Vikings before that. Or no, the Vikings, that was Kirk Cousins on that quarterback show. But like I don't like it. I don't like what they do to me here. Scott says, I've seen enough of this team and I have no questions about them. My hopes for this season are dead and buried.
Ah, nice.
So how does one become some kind of cheese engineer anyway?
Okay. So I'm technically an automation engineer, and because I have dairy experience, I got hired by a cheese company. So honestly, once you get your foot in the door in the dairy industry, as long as you don't burn any bridges, you're kind of in there for life.
Excellent. So you're the cheese AI guy.
Sure.
Automation. Well, I mean, automation and AI feel like strange bedfellows.
So,
similar
bedfellows. Funny enough to get into the weeds just a little bit. Most of the programming that I do is done through a type of language called ladder logic, where you're essentially drawing pictures. And ChatGPT cannot program my language.
Yep.
So I'm safe.
Draw.
That's right.
It can only do structured text.
Scratch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Mattingly's Cyburns. If you are playing Duck Duck Goose with the 2023 Green Bay Packers, who who are you selecting as the goose, and why is it Devondre Campbell?
I legitimately think I have a better chance of outrunning Devondre Campbell than I do, like, TJ Slayton.
Poor Devondre Campbell.
Yeah, that might be true. It's been tough for Devondre.
Yep.
Tough scene after that. You know, a little bit like Za'Darius Smith, not in terms of, like, actual personal, like, just having that one exemplary year, and then it getting very confusing after that.
Yeah.
Oh, Michael McNamara says, does Paul have any good ideas for Matt's profile picture? Because you won a bet.
Yeah, so before the podcast, we were trying to remember what the bet was, and we couldn't, but we did remember that I won it. So I don't, but I will come up with something this week. Maybe there'll be a vote. Who knows?
I love that we have a bet and we don't remember what it was. That's so good. Last question. I am the very model of a modern Major General Asila Tam. Is Matt LaFleur's weakness assessing coaching talent? And as we've said, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It just is. Across the board. But we're done.
Finally.
So happy holidays, guys. Don't know if we're going to, I don't know what the podcast is going to look like last week. If anything, Christmas is Monday, right? And I'm going to be at a Great Wolf Lodge for at least part of the recording period.
I literally was just at Great Wolf Lodge.
Sweet.
Wow, that's a lot of chlorine.
It is. It's a lot of chlorine. It's going to be a very dry Christmas. And, so I don't know. There might be something, but we might take a week off. It's the holidays. We'll see how everything goes. But
what if we do what Top Gear did and have a Boxing Day special where we all go on a road trip and everybody gets mad at the young guy?
Sounds better than going to Great Wolf Lodge. So,
or to a Carolina Panthers game where there's nobody who goes to the game, and if they kidnap the defensive coordinator for the Panthers, I'm not sure anyone's going to be there to see the crime. Yeah. So,
hey,
this might be the week to do it.
Good call.
Did you see what the Panthers tickets were going for on SeatGeek last week?
45 cents, baby. 45 cents.
That's awesome.
5,000 people went to an NFL game where you could get a ticket for 50 cents.
Quite nearly the worst attendance on record.
2023, where you could go to a football game for 41 cents.
45 cents. It was, of course, a driving rainstorm, but also it was Carolina Panthers football. And by God, they won a game. They beat the Atlanta Falcons. What a time to be alive.
They sure did.
They beat the Falcons by not scoring a touchdown.
They did that also. If they score against us, it will be very sad. All right, before we go, JR, do you have anything to plug?
Yeah, a couple things quick. First of all, I did karaoke for the first time in my life.
Nice.
Woo! I did. We didn't start the fire at the company Christmas party. Had a very good time. It worked out very, very well. I had a lot of fun. Also, tonight, I played trivia for the first time in a long time. We won. We took first place. Part of it was me being able to name successfully the 7 teams that have won back-to-back Super Bowls.
Ooh, fun.
I'll put you guys on the spot. Can you do it? The 7 teams that have won back-to-back Super Bowls.
All right. Packers.
Yes, that's true. The Packers have done that.
Patriots.
Patriots is correct. Although we had to think about it. That goes back to the Panthers and Eagles back to back in 04, 05.
Yeah. Steelers.
Yeah. The Steelers have done it. That's correct.
Cowboys.
The Cowboys have done it. Yes. They actually, the only Super Bowl rematch is Cowboys Bills back to back years. Yeah. Cowboys won both times.
See,
this is a great podcast.
It
is
a lot of silence.
I'm stuck here because we are
all right.
Did the Raiders do it?
Well, no, the Raiders didn't. They won their share of Super Bowls, but they're the one that we had written down that we ended up crossing off.
Okay.
Think first of all, think a team that beat the Packers, then went on to win their follow up Super
Bowl. Oh, stupid freaking Broncos!
Yes. All right. Now speaking of the Broncos, let's go back to the very late '80s. Maybe early 1990, like 88, 89. There it is. And then the undefeated 72 team was one of them who won.
The Dolphins
went back to back. That's correct. 74. Okay. Yep. Oh. Sure enough.
All right.
Yes, the Raiders.
My parents weren't even in high school when that happened, so I can't really.
Yeah. So yeah, that's just fun stuff. Personal side. On the work side at jsonline.com, there's Joe Barry stuff that we've written about. We'll have some year-end stuff. That stuff never really does super great. So I don't know. I've got my quotes of the year, Wisconsin sports quotes of the year that you can look for here. Landing, probably try to look ahead a little bit, look at some things in 2024. You may hear me on the Green 19 podcast, the Journal Sentinel Zone or PackersNews.com podcast, official podcast covering the Green Bay Packers with Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. My colleague Cassidy Hill has left to become a reporter with the Carolina Panthers. So her first game as a member of the Panthers payroll will be against the team she just covered, the Green Bay Packers. So I'll be helping out a little bit to get us through the rest of the season.
If she's not careful, she'll end up as the head coach. So.
Yeah, dang right. Good luck, Cassidy Hill, future Carolina Panthers coach. So you know, that's might be another place where you can hear my voice this week. It'll be kind of fun.
Check out Green 19. All right, Matt, you got anything?
Nope. As always, betting content. Call your best friend, tell him you love him, open your best bottles, life is short.
All right. I'll have something up this week. I got the Shepherd thing up right now. Minipod will be on Friday for Carolina. I have to figure out how the Carolina Panthers may actually beat the Packers, and I don't think it's going to be as hard as it was going to be like 2 weeks ago, so we'll do that. But keep an eye out for that. Everybody have a safe and happy holiday. We will be back sometime in the future, and enjoy the game. Go Pack it.
Come thou fount of every blessing, to my heart to sing thy grace. Streams of mercy never ceasing, call for songs of loudest praise. Teach me some melodious sonnet, sung by flaming tongues above. Praise the mount I'm fixed upon it, mount of thy unchanging love.